Good morning, everyone. It's nice to be here and to greet you this morning. I would also like to reiterate our gratitude to Mr. Arbisfeld for sponsoring this tremendous learning opportunity. And as you see in the sources in front of you, we will be talking about Ramban and his understanding of the structure of Sefer Shmot. So we started reading Sefer Shmot yesterday. So the first parsha in Sefer Shmot we've already read, but the Ramban, one of the wonderful things about Ramban and his very profound commentary is that he looks not only at individual psukim or individual parshiot, but he often takes a global understanding, presents a global understanding of the literary structure of the Torah. This is something of foremost importance for him. And one of my, my formative, the Rebbe who had the formative influence on me, Rav Aaron Lichtenstein, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, and it's very difficult for me to say that, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, to passed away just recently and had such an important influence on so many people, always used to emphasize how important Ramban is in Jewish tradition. And in a way, this lecture is inspired by his example, and we should live up to it. My lecture really has two goals, and maybe two and a third goal also. So it has a specific goal of understanding Ramban's analysis of Sefer Shmot, of the structure of Sefer Shmot. And that's a particular point in the Ramban. But the larger goal, after we complete the study of the sources, and part of our study of the sources, is to understand how Ramban worked within his intellectual environment and within the traditions of Jewish interpretation. So this is a kind of example that shows you how Ramban was in a dialogue. And this is something also that Rav Lichtenstein taught us, and it's something that inspired me myself to study in the Bernard Revel Graduate School, where we take a historical approach to the Mefarshim to understand how they work within a tradition. Ramban, it's important to understand when he lived, where he lived. Ramban's dates are 1194 to 1270. He was born in Christian Spain, in Girona near Barcelona, where he lived for most of his life, until toward the end of his life, he had a disputation with Pablo Cristiani, a converted Jew, and this disputation was in front of the king of Aragon, James I, and Ramban won the debate. And this did not look good for the king, for the Christian population, and therefore Ramban really was pressured to leave Spain and resettled at the end of his life in Eretz Yisrael. So Ramban lived in the Christian sector of Spain. He was part of a circle of scholars. He founded a school of Talmud commentators and also of Kabbalistic study. And so I'd like to look at Ramban not only as a parshan, as an interpreter of particular psukim or particular sefer, but to understand the larger picture. And that larger picture, as we're going to see, also includes the Rambam, Maimonides. Now, I actually have a charuta, and he tells me he always gets mixed up Ramban or Rambam. So the way to remember it is we say Rambam, Maimonides, with the emphasis on the first syllable, and Ramban, with Nachmanides, with the emphasis on the second syllable. So perhaps I'll use the English words, that those are easier to distinguish. But Maimonides, Rambam, lived two generations before Nachmanides. His dates are 1135 to 1204. And we're going to see how Nachmanides is in dialogue with Maimonides. And there's a debate here going on, partly because Ramban has a mystical outlook, has a Kabbalistic outlook, and Rambam, Maimonides, has a philosophical outlook. We're going to talk about this. I said that's the second goal, to understand Nachmanides, to understand Ramban within this larger cultural picture. And this is intended to be this morning's overall theme. We have a sister lecture being given to the women in Midrashet Yom Rishon. I assume there are some men there as well. It's probably a better lecture. The second lecture will be by Professor Reinhold, and we will have one of our outstanding alumni giving the second lecture to the women, Mrs. Shira Shiawitz, who was a student of mine in Stern College and in Bernard Revel. The theme of this morning's overall program is academic Jewish studies. We're learning some of the texts that are studied in the yeshiva, such as the Ramban. We're going to be studying texts from the Rambam. It's true, Moreh Nevuchim is not studied so much in the yeshiva, except, for example, in Gush. Rav Lichtenstein used to give shir in Moreh Nevuchim. But the point of academic Jewish studies is to understand the commentators and our tradition within a historical context. And one of the things that I learned from one of our most illustrious alumni, Professor Rabbi Aaron Rakefet, who wrote a biography of Bernard Revel. I'm sure some of you are aware of this. This emerged from his doctoral dissertation in the Revel Graduate School, where Dr. Revel said to Dr. Belkin in the 1930s, they initiated the idea of an academic Jewish studies program in the 1930s, and Dr. Belkin said, if you're able to accomplish this, this will be your greatest accomplishment. And Dr. Belkin was the first secretary of the graduate school. It was called then the Graduate Program in Semitics. It was later called the Revel Graduate Program. So there is some promotional material that we have here. Some of our lectures are available on YouTube now, and we have lectures that are given throughout the year, special lectures. There was one just given, which was really riveting. I'm sorry you have to listen to me. There was an expert on the Holocaust who spoke about the challenges that the Hungarian rabbis faced when they were deported along with their communities to the concentration camps. That lecture was videotaped. It will be up on our YouTube channel. It was given by a woman who is a world-renowned scholar of the Holocaust, who's the director of the Holocaust Center in Michlala in Jerusalem. Her name is Esther Farbstein. We give lectures of this type throughout the year. So please have a look at our website and our brochure. And again, if you're interested in further material, it's available here. So let's now turn to our sources for today. And I'd like to read, I don't want to read every single line here, but I'm careful not to give you 50 pages of sources. I've chosen 9 sources, and of course you can read more of the Ramban inside. These are intended to give you just a taste of the Ramban's view on Sefer Shmot. Ramban writes an introduction to Sefer Shmot, and this is unique to the Ramban, that he gives you an outline of the entire book. And he begins by saying that Sefer Shmot is a separate book. Chapter 50 of Bereishit ended off Sefer Bereishit. A new book begins with Shmot. It's not just Bereishit, Perek Nun Aleph. It's Shmot Perek Aleph. So Ramban says there are two separate themes. The theme of Sefer Bereishit, he says, is Sefer HaYetzirah. And this is what he says in the first line here. It's the book of creation. So you might ask the Ramban, well, there's a reason that no one else thought of this. It's the book of, and we think about it in English as Genesis, that's true, but that's just, you know, it's really the topic, how much is Genesis? It's the topic of the first parsha. You can't say that the whole Sefer is about the creation of the world. So Ramban says it's the creation of the world and Am Yisrael, because the Avos are like a creation for their progeny. And this is something, if I were giving a shiur on Sefer Breishi, I would talk about the Ramban on this topic, but some of you may be aware, Ramban says, Ma'ase avot siman lebanim, that everything that happens to the avos is repeated with Bnei Yisrael. It's like a foreshadowing of the rest of the history of Bnei Yisrael. And so Ramban says that that's the theme of Sefer Breishit. And therefore he says in the second line, Acharei shehishlim hayitzira, after the Torah completed creation, Nityached Sefer ve'eleshmot b'inyan hagalut harishon uvagi'ula mimenu. Nityached is a nice word. It's dedicated. That's a good English translation. It's special. Sefer Shmot is dedicated to a topic, to a theme. This is a new book. What is the topic? What's the overarching topic? Sefer Hagalut v'Hagi'ula, the book of exile and redemption. That's the theme. Now you might say, simple. Okay, so what? But we're going to look at it. Ramban goes line by line, step by step, in a very profound analysis of this theme. The first thing he does is beautiful, because Derech Agav, you have to be a Talmud Chacham to appreciate Ramban, or you can use Rav Shavel and have the footnotes. But the more you know, and this is one of the nice things about scholarship, the more you know about one thing, you can apply it to other things. I'm sure many of you reviewed, whether talking with your children or with your spouse or with your families, the first Rashi in Sefer Shmot. It says, Ve'ele Shmot B'nei Yisrael Abayim Mitzrayima. These are the names of B'nai Yisrael who came down, Ruvain, Shimon, Levi, Yudah. These are the ones who came down. And Rashi asks, the Torah already told you that. And there are no extra words in the Torah. The Torah already said in Parshat Vayigash that Yaakov went down to Mitzrayim with the rest of his family, except for Yosef and his family that were already in Egypt. So why does the Torah repeat it? So Rashi gives you, as he typically does, a midrashic answer, that Hashem loves to count Bnei Israel because they are chavim chavivim lefanav and kachochavim shulu lakochavim, and so Rashi gives that midrashic answer. Ramban gives a pshat answer. He says, since this is Sefer Hagalut v'Hagi'ula, Lachein chazar v'itchil b'shmot yordei Mitzrayim u'misparam. Af al pi shekvar nizkar. Even though it's already mentioned, so that's why I put a footnote here, or a parenthesis, Hashvei Rashi, compare this with Rashi. Why does the Torah repeat? Ba'avur ki yiridatam sham hu reshit hagalut ki me'az huchal. The Torah has to begin Sefer Shmot in order for it to be Sefer Hagalut, the Hagi'ulah, it has to start with the theme of the book. That's where the Galut begins. So even though in a different book, in Sefer Breishit, it mentions it, but this is a new book. So that's the idea here. It's not Breishit Nun Aleph. It's not the next chapter. This is a new book. And the new book has to begin with a new theme. You're starting by recapping, and that's why Ramban says this is said Bikitsur, it's a kind of recapping. This is how they first went down to Egypt. And this is a nice example of Ramban's literary analysis. By literary analysis, I mean that Ramban sees a theme to the entire book, and he says this is a bookend. This is the first page of the new book. It's a literary unit. And so therefore Ramban, and he says later on in his commentary on this pasuk, he quotes Rashi and he says that's a midrashic idea, but this is the pshat interpretation in order to give you this literary sense. But the truth is we'll focus primarily on the next part of Ramban. Because Ramban actually has to be creative in order to truly establish that this is the book of exile and redemption. Because you remember we said when he gave the title to Sefer Breishit, Sefer Hayetzirah, the book of creation, that's great for the first parsha, Breishit, the creation of the world. But what does he do with all the rest? So he has to explain that. Here too, if you think about it, where is the redemption? exile and redemption. Okay, when do they leave Mitzrayim? In Parshat Bo. They leave. Yatzu kol tzivot Hashem me'eretz Mitzrayim. After 430 years, it tells you. Yatzu kol tzivot Hashem me'eretz Mitzrayim. So, but that's Parshat Bo. So if you want to stretch it more, you could say Kriyat Yamsuf. At Kriyat Yamsuf, they saw that the Egyptians were destroyed. Then they could breathe easy. Fine. Where's Kriyat Yamsuf? It's Parshat Beshalach. How far can you get? If you really, really want to draw it out, you could say the culmination. Why did Hashem take Bnei Israel out of Mitzrayim? To give them the Torah. Okay. So Matan Torah. Where does that take you? That's Yitro. All right. So how far? Ramban has to get to the end of Pekudei. All right. So it's a lot of parshiot. It's Mishpatim. It's Truma, Tetzaveh, and then Vayakel Pekudei. So Ramban understands that. So he says, he's going to answer this question. V'hinei hagalut einenu nishlam ad yom shuvam el mekomam ve'el ma'alat avotam yashuvu. The galut doesn't really end until they come back to their place and the stature, ma'alat, or the virtue, the greatness of their forefathers. The only problem here is Ramban seems to have overshot. Because when do they come back to their place? They come back to their place, to Eretz Yisrael. They come back in, say, for Yoshua. So let's see. Ramban has to fine-tune this a little bit. And that's what he's doing. So let's see. First, let's read it carefully. U'kishiyatzu mi Mitzrayim, afal pi shiyatzu mi beit avadim, adayin yechashvu golim. This is very nice. And I love this Ramban. This is a really beautiful Ramban. Just because they crossed the border doesn't mean that they're out of exile. Adayin yechashvu golim ki hayu be'eretz lo lahem nivuchim bamidbar. They were in a foreign land. They were wandering about in the desert. U'kishibau el har Sinai ve'asu hamishkan. Okay, so asu hamishkan, so that's vayakel pekudei. So ba'u el har Sinai, so that's Yitro, but then they received the Torah, they received the mitzvot, and Truma Tetzaveh is the command to build the Mishkan, and then Vayakel Pekudei, they created the Mishkan, they constructed the Mishkan. V'shav HaKadosh Baruch Hu V'hishra Shechinato Beinehem Az Shavu El Ma'alat Avotam. That's the point at which they came back to the great standing, to the greatness, the ma'alah, of their forefathers. Shehaya sod Eloah alei olehem. And that's a verse from Eov, that God's presence was with them. And this we're going to see. This will be the theme of our discussion today. God's presence was with them. That's az nechshavu geulim. That's the time that they were true, they had gotten to true Geula. V'lachein nishlam ha-sefer hazeh behashlimo inyan ha-mishkan uviyot kvod Hashem malei oto tamid. That's why Sefer Shmot ends with uchvod Hashem malei oto tamid. The glory of God filled the Mishkan. That's when true Geula was reached, was accomplished. And I remember I first learned this Ramban when I was in high school, and I had the great zchut to have as my teacher Rabbi Shlomo Riskin, I remember to this day him teaching us this Ramban, and he said something beautiful. He said, according to Ramban, the Mishkan is extraterritorial Eretz Yisrael. It's like they were in Eretz Yisrael because the Shekhinah was with them. That's what the Mishkan accomplishes. The Ramban has this very clear and beautiful description of the hashkafic significance of the Mishkan. The Shekhinah is with Bnei Yisrael, and that's the true definition of Geula. And that's why Ramban, in his Akdama to Parsha Truma, this is source number 2, Ramban emphasizes that the purpose of the Mishkan is to house the Shekhinah. He says there was the kavod, the glory of God that came down to Har Sinai will there be there benistar. And he has a proof from a pasuk, because it says in Shmot Kafdalet at the end of Parshat Mishpatim, Vaishkon Kvod Hashem al Har Sinai, Kain Katuv Bamishkan, Ukvod Hashem Malei et Hamishkan. The glory of God filled the Mishkan. And that's the conclusion of Sefer Shmot. Now, this, by the way, this Hakdama to Truma, I'll just mention parenthetically, is another beautiful, beautiful analysis of Truma. Ramban there says that the purpose of Parshat Mishpatim, to tell Bnei Yisrael some of the mitzvot, he said, and then at the end of Parshat Mishpatim, Moshe Rabbeinu sprinkles on them Dam HaBrit, he makes a brit with them, he says, that makes them into Geirim, that makes them into converts to Judaism. That's when they became fully, they had Kiddushat Yisrael because they accepted the mitzvot. And Ramban says, the first mitzvah that they receive when they get this first Kedusha is to build a Mishkan. He said, because that is what God was waiting for. He was waiting for them, and we're going to see this later on, God was waiting for them to receive this Kedusha, to be worthy to build the Mishkan, so that God will have a place in this earth, in this world, to house the Mishkan. And this is the Ramban, this is Nachmanides. And now we're going to shift gears, because Ramban, Nachmanides, had in mind a polemic, a disagreement with Maimonides, with the Rambam. And let's look at the Rambam, let's look at Maimonides, source number 3. Maimonides wrote, most of what Maimonides wrote was in Arabic. Maimonides lived in the Muslim area of Spain. He was born in Cordoba in 1138, and in his youth, his father and the family moved to North Africa, and eventually they settled in Egypt. And the Rambam was, for all of his life, under he was in Muslim lands, and therefore he wrote most of his writings in Arabic. But they were translated very soon. Most of his writings were translated very soon into Hebrew. Maimonides wrote a book of the commandments, Sefer HaMitzvot. And the 20th commandment that Maimonides enumerates is the mitzvah to build the Beit HaMikdash. And he has that pasuk, Ve'asu li mikdash v'shachanti betocham. That's the beginning of Parshat Truma. And we're going to see the Rambam, Maimonides, has a very different perspective on what is the nature of the Mishkan and the Beit HaMikdash. So he says, Sivanu livnot Beit Avodah. The mitzvah of Mikdash is to build a house of worship. Bo yihyeh ha-hakrava ve-havarat ha-esh tamid ve-elav yihyeh ha-halicha ve-aliyah l-regel. V'hu omro ve-asu li mikdash. That's what the pasuk says, ve-asu li mikdash. Now, it's interesting, if you read the Rambam, if you read the original Arabic text, when he uses the word Aliyah L'Regel, that's the Hebrew translator, it's Moshe ibn Tibon who translated this work. The Arabic word is Hajj. Let me just see if I can... Hajj. Okay, which is a cognate of the Hebrew word Chag, or really Chagigah. But in Arabic, you may see this. You may see this in the news. This is the pilgrimage to Mecca for the Muslims. But Maimonides used this term. It was a common term, and so he used the term for Aliyah L'Regel. Or, for example, when the Rambam talks about the Torah, he says our Sharia. Okay, Sharia is now in the news a lot. But these were terms that the Rambam used. But I'm not going to focus on that. I just My children always quip that I'm very annoying because I ask my kids, what's the shorish of that word? What does it come from? That's part of my linguistic study. And again, that's something that Dr. Revel envisioned when he started the program for Semitic studies in yeshiva in the 1930s. But Rabbi Soloveitchik, who, by the way, also was a professor in Revel, in addition to being a Rosh Yeshiva, Rabbi Soloveitchik had a wonderful explanation about the difference between Maimonides and Nachmanides on the reason for the mitzvah of Mishkan and Mikdash. And the way he explained it is that the Rambam, when he says, why do you build a Mishkan, you build the Mishkan for an instrumental purpose. It's there in order to do other mitzvot, in order to bring korbanot there, in order to do aliyah l'regel there. You need a central place for worship. So it's a place where people can come and do avodat Hashem. Ramban, Rabbi Soloveitchik explained, Nachmanides views the Mishkan as having intrinsic value as being the place where God rests the Shekhinah, where the Shekhinah rests. It has inherent intrinsic value, even if no one comes to do worship there. It's just the house of God. And the way that I describe it in more simple terms to my children, I say, according to the Rambam, according to Maimonides, it's like God's office. You come there to meet with God. According to Nachmanides, it's like God's home. The Shekhinah has a home. Now, there's a reason that Maimonides did not say that the purpose of the Mishkan is to house the Shekhinah. Because what does that mean? Maimonides was part of a philosophical tradition. And actually, I saw one of the tests that Rabbi Soloveitchik gave when he was a professor in Revel on Jewish philosophy. That was his subject. He spoke about Maimonides, and he spoke about Rabbeinu Sadia Gaon. Rabbeinu Sadia Gaon, his dates are 882 to 942. He lived in the Muslim East. He was born in Egypt, and then he moved to Bavel, where he was the Gaon of Sura. And Rav Sadia Gaon established, he was probably not the very first, but he established the importance of the integration of philosophy and Torah study. And one of the tenets that Rabbeinu Sadia Gaon established was the incorporeality of God. That God has no body, has no physical manifestation. God is pure spirit. And so therefore, when the Torah describes God's eyes, Enei Hashem El Tzadikim, or God's hand, Yad Hashem, those are all metaphorical. And it's not just that God doesn't have a body. It's that God has no physical manifestation. And this is very important. And you see this in the next source, in Moreh Nevuchim, in the Rambam's Guide for the Perplexed. And Moreh Nevuchim is about, primarily, about interpretation of the Torah, interpretation of the Bible, in light of philosophy and science. There are many psukim that Maimonides says will be very perplexing if you don't understand how to interpret them correctly. And so the Rambam says on the Pasuk, Uchvod Hashem Maleit HaMishkan. What does that mean? God's presence filled the Mishkan. Well, what does it mean when you say filled? So one of the things that the Rambam does, and that's why I drive my kids crazy with the language issues, the Rambam was a linguist as well. And he refers to the great linguists in Muslim Spain, and he says words have many meanings. And they can, you know, you can say to fill something, you can fill a jar with water. But there are other meanings of the word filled. So for example, milei otam chochmat lev, that's a pasuk he quotes there, or milo kol haaretz kvodo. So the world is filled with the glory of God. Or, you know, or if you say someone is filled with wisdom, or he filled the entire hour, you know, with wisdom or with nonsense or with levity. When you say you filled an hour, what do you mean? So the Rambam says fill here means something metaphorical. And so when it says Uchvod Hashem Malei Et HaMishkan, the Rambam says at the very bottom of source number 4, Lo Sheyesh Lo Guf Yimalei Makom. It's not that God has a body that fills the place. Like you couldn't get into the Mishkan, you know, because it was, like you can say, a bus in Israel sometimes. I guess sometimes in the U.S. also. Or the subway, you could say it was packed with people, so I couldn't get in, so that's, you're saying it's filled. But that's not what it means, Uchvod Hashem Malei Et HaMishkan, because God doesn't have a body, God doesn't have a physical presence. It's metaphorical. And then the Rambam quotes, there's another interpretation that Rabbeinu Sadia Gaon gave, which is also good. He says, Im ela im tirtzeh, shetasim kvod Hashem, at the last line of source 4, ha'or hanivra, v'hu asher milei tamishkan. Rabbeinu Sadia Gaon came up with an idea that any place it says, Ukvod Hashem nir ebe anan, that you saw God's glory in a cloud. What does that mean? That there's something physical that God created. So Rabbeinu Sadia Gaon says when it says Ukvod Hashem malei tamishkan, it means that God created a light as a representative to show that he was pleased with what Bnei Israel did. So basically, Rav Sadia Gaon and following him, Maimonides, believe that God cannot physically be located in any place. Could God come into this room? God can't come into this room because he's not physical. It's a logical impossibility. Because if God came into this room, so God's not like a person, come into this room, so what, God's not in the other place? Where is God? If he's here, he's not there. So the Rambam says philosophically, it doesn't make sense to say that God is in one place and not in another place. And so therefore, all of these psukim that say God fills the Mishkan are to be understood metaphorically. And in source number 5, I gave you another example. Following in this philosophical trajectory, you have Radak, a very famous commentator who lived in Provence, that's southern France, a generation after Maimonides, and he was profoundly influenced by Maimonides. When the Navi says that Shlomo HaMelech built the Beit HaMikdash, Shlomo HaMelech has a beautiful prayer. You should read it. Absolutely stunning, beautiful, describing how Shlomo HaMelech dedicates the Beit HaMikdash, and one of the things he says is, Hine Hashamayim Ushmei Hashamayim Lo Yechalkelucha, Af Ki HaBayit HaZeh Asher Baniti. The heavens can't encompass God. So how is this house going to encompass God? How is it going to house God? So Radak says, because he's influenced by Maimonides and Rabbeinu Sadia Gaon, he says, it's al derech mashal. It's by way of figurative language. And that's what it means, that God pays special attention to people who daven in his place. So you have this tradition of Rabbeinu Sadia Gaon, of Maimonides, of Radak, who say that God can't physically be located. And so if it says, Chvod Hashem Malei Et HaMishkan, it's something that is metaphorical, or it could be a light that God created. When you look at the Ramban, Nachmanides, going back to source number 1 and source number 2, you get a sense that he's not participating in that tradition. He says, what's the point of all of Sefer Shmot, when do they reach Geula? When Uchvod Hashem Malei Et HaMishkan. What filled the Mishkan according to Ramban? Was it a light bulb? Was it an idea? So Ramban says, Nachmanides in source number 6, Nachmanides says, Chas v'shalom. Okay, he's very adamant about this. Chas v'shalom. Sheyehyeh hadavar hanikra shechina. O kavod, nivra chutz me Hashem anichbad yitbarach. Don't think it's something created by God. It's not something created. It's not something external to God. It is rather God himself. A part of God himself that is in the Mishkan. And he says, don't think that it's something created. Kasher chashav harav, which Rav?
Rambam.
As the Rambam thought, kan ubi prakim rabim misifro. In many chapters of his book, he thought this way. So we're going to come back to Ramban in a few moments, because this is a very audacious thing to say after the tradition has been so well established by Rav Sadia Gaon, by Maimonides, by Radak, and there are other Jewish philosophers that I won't add on to this, except for one, which we'll see in source number 7. Nachmanides has the audacity to say that God himself fills the Mishkan. God's presence fills the Mishkan. We're going to have to understand what he means by that, where he's coming from. But first, let's look at number 7. Because number 7, you know, the Rambam was already dead and buried by the time Ramban wrote what he wrote. So how is the Rambam, Maimonides, how is he going to answer Ramban? How is he going to answer Nachmanides? So fortunately for Maimonides, he had many supporters who followed in his footsteps after Nachmanides. And we have Sefer HaChinuch. Sefer HaChinuch, source number 7, was written in the generation after Nachmanides in Christian Spain. And Sefer HaChinuch here, it's a work that is written anonymously. I think Yisrael Meir Tashma determined that it was written by Rabbi Pinchas Halevi, the brother of Rabbi Aaron Halevi, the Ra'ah, who was a student of the Ramban, but it's the generation after the Ramban, and here more important than the biography is you see all of the imprints, all of the fingerprints of the whole philosophical rational tradition of Rav Sadia Gaon, of the Rambam, of Radak. And he says, in his description of the mitzvah, Sefer HaChinuch is like Sefer HaMitzvot of the Rambam, except that it's organized, it organizes the mitzvot according to the Parshiot, and Sefer HaChinuch says, the purpose of building the Beit HaMikdash. What's the purpose of the building Beit HaMikdash? And the Chinuch knew the Ramban, he knew Nachmanides very well, and he avoids saying it's to house God, it's to house the Shechina. He says, Binyan bayit l'Hashem yitbarach, hakol lehachin halavavot la'avodato yit'ale. The purpose is to make us worship God, to make us closer to God. Lo miyoto tzarich lashevet beit anashim v'lashevet betzil koratam. Don't think that it's because God needs a Mishkan. Because the Chinuch understood that if you say that the purpose of the Mishkan is to house the Shechina. So here's the question. When there's no Beis HaMikdash, when the Beis HaMikdash is destroyed, where is God? Is God homeless? You know, you think you did God a favor by building the Beit HaMikdash and now you can house the Shechina? So he says, no. He says, don't think that. Ki ha-shamayim u-shmei ha-shamayim lo yichal kluhu. Af ki ha-bayit asher banu b'nei Adam. That, of course, is a paraphrase of what Shlomo HaMelech said. Don't think that God needs the Mishkan, he needs the Mikdash. The heavens can't encompass God, certainly not this house. Don't think that it's tzarich kvodo. What's that word he adds? Chalila. Okay, he read the Ramban who said, don't think that it's nivrachutz mito chas v'shalom. Okay, so he's saying chalila to say that God needs that. V'ashem chavetz betovatan shel briot. Ve'al kein tzivanu likboa makom shiyeh tahor v'naki betachlit hanekiyut letaher sham machshevot bnei adam uletaken levavam elav bo. That's the purpose of the Mishkan, to worship God, to worship God. And here he comes to a very beautiful point where he says, mitoch hechsher hama'aseh, in the bottom of source 7, mitoch hechsher hama'aseh v'taharat hamachshava sheyeh lanu sham, ya'ale sichleinu el hadvekut im ha'sechel ha'elyoni. the Chinuch talks about Dveikut with God, Dveikut, connecting with God, attaching yourself to God, that does not happen in the physical realm. It happens in the spiritual realm. When you say that a Talmid is very close to his Rebbe, or even a husband and wife are very close to one another, or children are close to their parents, you don't mean in a physical sense. You mean in a spiritual sense. And our spirit attaches with God's spirit. The alderech hapshat, this is a very audacious thing to say, the alderech hapshat, al hatzad hazeh nefaresh shriyat hashchina b'makomahu. That's what shchina means. Shchina means attaching to God in your mind. And what the Chinuch has done, and this is, I have not seen this in any other commentator, it's not saying it's a light that God created, it's saying shchina means that people are connected with God in their mind, in their intellect, in their neshama. That's what it means. So you have the Chinuch coming back at Nachmanides and really pointing to the weak point of Nachmanides, because Nachmanides implies that you're saying you're building the Beit HaMikdash in order to house the Shekhinah, so it sounds like you're doing a favor to God, because without the Mishkan, without the Mikdash, God is homeless. Whereas the Chinuch says, and Maimonides says, that the purpose of the Beit HaMikdash and the Mishkan is for people, for us to do Avodat Hashem. So which is it? So of course it's a machlokas, like many other things in Judaism, but we're going to see where Nachmanides, how does Nachmanides answer the Chinuch implicitly, or answer the Rambam? And that's in source number 8, and that's dependent on the theme of our discussion today, and that's Kabbalah. And I mentioned this at the very beginning of our lecture today, Ramban as a Mekubal, Ramban as a Kabbalist, as a mystic. And Ramban introduces mysticism into Jewish mysticism, into his commentary at key points. And this is going to be one of them. And I remember when I was working on this sugya, I was discussing it with my teacher, Rav Aaron Lichtenstein, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, and he told me, and this goes back many years, I'd say probably 25 or 30 years, and I remember Rav Lichtenstein told me, look at the Ramban on Shmot Kaftet Memvav, and that's source number 8. And that's the key that unlocks this whole sugya. It's a difficult Ramban. We'll read it carefully and slowly. This comes on a pasuk. This Ramban is on a pasuk that seems innocuous at first. Shmot Kaftet Memvav is like a random pasuk. It's not the first pasuk in Sefer Shmot. It's not the last pasuk in Sefer Shmot. It's not even the beginning of Parshat Truma. It says, Ani Hashem Eloheihem, Asher Hotzeiti Otam Me'eretz Mitzrayim Lishochni V'tocham. I am God, Hashem, their God, who brought them out of Egypt, Lishochni V'tocham. And what does that mean, Lishochni V'tocham? So if you say, I went to the store to buy a loaf of bread, one thing is an instrument, that there's an ultimate goal here. The only reason that I went to the store was to buy a loaf of bread. I wanted a loaf of bread. I needed something, so therefore I went to the store. Or, you know, I gave the storekeeper $1 in order to get a loaf of bread. Why did I do something for him? In order to get something for myself. So Ramban quotes Ibn Ezra, who emphasizes this point. Ibn Ezra says, Rabbi Abraham Amar, Ki lo hotzeiti otam me'eretz Mitzrayim, rak be'avur ki eshkon betocham. And the word rak here, if you're familiar with Rabbinic Hebrew, as many of you are, but modern Israelis always have a trouble with Ibn Ezra because it's not modern Hebrew. It means Ela. Ibn Ezra says, Lo tzeit yotam me'eretz Mitzrayim, Ela ba'avur kishkon betocham. The only reason I took Bnei Yisrael out of Mitzrayim is in order to dwell among them. That was the reason that I took Bnei Yisrael out of Mitzrayim. I did it in order to have a place to dwell. Wow. So Ramban says, V'im kein yesh ba'inyan sod gadol. And the word sod in Ramban is a code word for mystical truth. This is a mystical, this has a mystical point to it. And we're going to read this slowly. He says, Ki kefi pshat hadavar, hashchina b'Yisrael tzorech hedyot v'lo tzorech gavoa. So let me explain two words here. Tzorech hedyot means for the sake of people. And sorry that this is so, I didn't bring one of these. But tzorech hedyot means the needs of people. Tzorech gavoa, I'm not even going to do it this way. Tzorech gavoa, oh, thank you. Tzorech gavoa, it's even worse. Okay. Tzorech gavoa means for God's sake. Tzorech hedyot means for the sake of people. Who said that the Mishkan is for the sake of people? Maimonides said it. The Chinuch said it. That the purpose, the rational purpose of the Mishkan is to give people a place to worship God. But there's a mystical purpose to the Mishkan. Sod hadavar, lefi sod hadavar, hashchinah b'Yisrael is tzorech gavoa. That's that Ibn Ezra. That Ibn Ezra says, and Ibn Ezra, recently scholarship has shown, scholars have shown that Ibn Ezra has a mystical tendency to him, to recognize that this pasuk says that God took Bnei Israel out of Mitzrayim in order to dwell among them. And now we will go back and understand Ramban, Nachmanides, throughout all the sources that we've seen. Because Nachmanides says that there's a Kabbalistic secret here, a Kabbalistic dimension. And Kabbalah, unlike philosophy, the philosophers emphasized God's transcendence, that God is in the heavens. As Shlomo Melech said, Hinei Hashemayim Ushmei Hashemayim Lo Yichal Keluha. The heavens can't encompass God. God is far away. God is not in the physical world. God can't come into this room. God can't be present physically. It's only in your mind that you can connect with God, as the Chinuch says. The Kabbalists emphasize God's immanence in this world. God dwells among people. God dwells in this world, and the way that they establish this, and I can't really go into it, and we'll see Ramban would recommend against going into it, but at least to say it briefly, the idea of the Sfirot, the idea of the emanations of God. God emanates out and radiates out spirituality, but actually comes into the physical world. And Shekhinah is the last emanation of God that actually enters into the physical world. How this works, Ramban says, is a Kabbalistic secret. But you have to know that it does work. You have to know that God actually is in the physical world, and it's that aspect of God, Shekhinah, that's in the world. And when there's a Kabbalistic notion of Shechinta Begaluta, Rabbi Soloveitchik speaks about this. Shechinta Begaluta means that when Bnei Israel are not in Eretz Yisrael and the Beit HaMikdash is destroyed, the Shechinah doesn't have a place to rest. And when Bnei Israel build the Mishkan, the Shechinah, one of the emanations of God, is completed. And when Bnei Israel do Kiyum HaMitzvot, you know, we say L'shem Yichud Kudsha Brichu U'Shechintei. What does that mean? To unify. Some misnagdim don't say that because it's Kabbalistic. All right, to say, to unite the Sfirot of God. The Kabbalists argue that there is something you actually accomplish in God's nature in the Sfirot. So, according to the Ramban, when Bnei Israel are in Galut, where is the Shekhinah? Also in Galut. And so Sefer Shmot, we saw in source number one, is Sefer HaGalut VeHaGe'ulah. It's not only Galut and Ge'ulah of Bnei Israel, it's also Galut and Ge'ulah of the Shekhinah itself. So that's why Ramban says at the end of source number one, he says, Lachein nishlam ha-sefer hazeh v'hashlimo inyan ha-mishkan uviyot kvod Hashem alei oto tamin. That's why Sefer Shmot ends with the culmination of the Shekhinah coming down into the Mishkan. So if we are to sum up what we've seen today, Nachmanides, Ramban, uses his Kabbalistic doctrines in order to have a better literary understanding of Sefer Shmot, but also to understand the Hashkafic implications of Sefer Shmot. And this is hinted at in source number 9. We're not going to do it. We're running out of time at this point. You can look at source number 9. I'll just summarize this source and what it really shows about Ramban, about Nachmanides. Ramban, in his introduction to the Torah, announces that he is going to introduce Kabbalistic hints. He's going to reference Kabbalah. But he says, unless you're an initiate in Kabbalah, don't try to understand the Kabbalistic hints, because you won't understand them. And he says, you know, it's usher to investigate them further. So the question is, if Ramban didn't believe you, if he felt it was usher to look into it further, why did he put in the Kabbalistic hints? So one scholar of Kabbalah said, a very important scholar of Kabbalah said, this was a marketing tool. The best way to get people to read your book is to get someone to put it in Chirim, to say, you're not allowed to read that book. Then already I want to see what's in there. Okay, so, but that I don't think is giving Ramban so much credit. I think it's something else, and other scholars have said this as well. Ramban believed that Kabbalah is very important as a bulwark, as a kind of response to the rationalist tradition of Maimonides, of Rav Sadia Gaon, that make God transcendent. And according to Ramban, that's pushing God kind of to the periphery. Ramban, as a Kabbalist, wants to introduce God into this world. How it works, how can the Shekhinah be in the Mishkan and not somewhere else? How does that work? That's a Kabbalistic secret. That's something that you can't understand unless you have the Kabbalah. But to understand how to read the Psukim, that everybody has to know, and that's based on those Kabbalistic secrets. Now, there are many other examples of this kind of application. You may know there's a debate between the Rambam and Ramban about korbanot, about how to understand the korbanot. The Rambam says the korbanot have a kind of sociological significance because people in the time of Yitziat Mitzrayim were worshipping korbanot. Ramban disagrees with that vehemently, and he says the korbanot have a mystical significance to them. It's again, you understand only part of the Kabbalah, but Ramban says it has inherent significance. As I said, there are many other examples, but we're running short on time. I think we've illustrated, number one, Ramban's understanding of Sefer Shmot. Number two, his debate with the rationalist tradition to understand how Ramban works is in a dialogue with others within the Jewish tradition. And number three, we've illustrated a little bit about what it means to study Jewish studies academically, to appreciate how Ramban is not just an interpretation of Psukim, but he's really working within his place and time, and it's important to understand that historical background and cultural context to fully appreciate Ramban's greatness. I thank you all for listening today.